Hey everybody, I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM podcast, and excuse me while I get onto my phone because I need to show you who we are talking to today. And this little Instagram thing might catch on. It might be a thing at some point. See, listen, he's talking right now. If you recognize the voice, that's Kevin Skippy Morrow. He is out of New Jersey. He's a certified crop advisor, if you believe that. He's like, I got letters behind my name. We hardly got into the crop discussion, but what we did get into is talking about agriculture in the state of New Jersey. Now, some of you might go, you know what I mean? They've got farms out there. It's the Garden State, for heaven's sakes. We give a little quick history lesson about what New Jersey grows. And we get into, towards the end of this discussion, a rural-urban debate about where these farms are at, between where he lives, where he works, some of the things that he sees, the neighbors, and how that discussion happens, where people are very curious to know about one certain thing when it comes to agriculture. And you can kind of guess what it might be near big cities. And that's what Kevin's going to talk about today. If you have any ideas for me or feedback on this episode, hit me up, paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. This is the MTOM podcast, and some of our past episodes are available in YouTube as well as wherever you get your podcasts. So we are so glad that you have let us take up some of the space you have on the internet. But now let's talk to Kevin. Rain today, huh?
Yeah, enough of it. Rain today and tomorrow.
Are you in a dry slot right now, or are you you okay with the rain?
No, we can do without for a little bit.
What's been the wettest time that you can remember?
It depends. So, spring of 2018, but fall of 2018, but summer of 2019.
Yeah.
We're always 10 days away from a drought. So it's we don't have wet years. We just have wet spells, and then it'll be a dry spell, and then it'll get wet again.
Well, tell me, okay, you tell me you're from Harmony Township, New Jersey, and then I asked another town. You tell me another township. Why can't you call them towns? What's the deal with townships with you guys?
The old grandfather clock is letting us know what time it is.
That's but, all right.
So Phillipsburg is the sending address, but Harmony Township is the actual town that I live in.
Okay.
So our post office isn't in town. We have it in the neighboring town.
See, I think everybody out here thinks that New Jersey is just highways and places where they film The Sopranos or something. Is that not right?
Well, there's a lot of it like that. We all know how to talk just in case, you know.
Oh, do you have to break that out every once in a while?
You never know who you're going to come across. But there's – I forget how many – I saw a stat one time on how much pavement there is in this state, and it's an astounding number. But there's portions of New Jersey that are very highly populated, the northeastern part of the state, and then there's a pocket down across the river from Philadelphia that is extremely populated. There's a couple other spots around Atlantic City and whatnot, but then we have rural New Jersey is where I'm from. And it looks a lot like that picture that you have behind over your left shoulder. It's not nearly as flat. It's pretty mountainous. The Appalachian mountain range kind of rolls through here up in the northwestern part of the state. And when you go down south, it flattens out a bit and turns into beach sand. So, and we also have the Pine Barrens that cut the state kind of in half to the bottom. I don't know, the second third of it or so is very piney.
So you're in, I would call center west. Is that fairly
northwest.
Accurate?
Northwest is where I live. Okay. And the farm where we're at is mainly north central.
So the long-term nickname for the state is the Garden State. Is that still accurate today?
In most of the state, yeah. There's still a lot of the rural land. There's a lot of a very diverse landscape when it comes to the agriculture. You know, you have corn and bean country up here. You go down to South Jersey and there's a lot of blueberry production, tomato production, a lot of vegetables down there. Everything's irrigated down there. Nothing's irrigated up here. It's it's pretty neat. Once you cross the fault line and you get down into the flat part, it totally changes.
What's the fault line? I mean, is that a river, a valley, or something like that?
There's a, well, you want to get into plate tectonics a little bit, but
I watch National Geographic on Sunday. I feel smarter. Let's go.
There's actually a fault line that runs through kind of diagonally across the center of the state, and it splits from the rocky region up here, where it's more hilly and mountainous, to the sand down there, which the glacial till up here, it stopped somewhere around that point, and the rest of New Jersey was under the water.
Yeah. So the biggest crop in the state is what today?
Definitely corn.
Yeah. Has it always been that way?
I'm pretty sure. As far as I can remember, you know, which isn't really that far in the past, but it's always been kind of corn beans. That's usually the main cash crop. We have a pretty decent market for it here, especially being this close to the ocean. All of our beans get put on a container ship and exported. All of our corn goes to Pennsylvania to be turned into animal feed.
And we've had I had a conversation, gosh, it was back in the fall already, with a guy in Center, Pennsylvania, and that's Lance had said that, you know, they provide the whole eastern seaboard with stuff. And mm-hmm. between the two of you in your two areas, because there's not much corn further north of you, is there? Does upstate New York have much corn?
Yeah, there's quite a bit up there. There's a lot of corn and hay production up there. You know, you get more into dairy country, animal country up there.
Yeah.
Where they're, you know, livestock production. So those guys are raising feed for the livestock. So the purpose behind their corn is a little bit different. You know, a lot of silage. So, but I know quite a few people up there that are still growing grain.
Do you meet people from outside of your part of the country? Or heck, it probably doesn't even have to. You could go into the city, either one, go to Pennsylvania or go to Philly or go to New York, and you tell them you're a farmer. Do they think you're from like one of the I states? And you tell them, no, I'm from New Jersey. Do they look at you kind of funny?
They don't look at me as funny as the people from the I states when I tell them I'm a farmer from New Jersey.
Because they think they're the only ones that farm, right? Let's be honest.
Well, I don't know if they think they're the only ones that farm, but they sure that's why I like to call New Jersey forgotten agriculture, because we, you know, we're over here kind of tucked away in the armpit of America, and not too many people really know the production that comes out of the state. I do believe we're still number one in blueberry production, so we got that going for us.
Michigan hasn't taken you over there?
I don't know. They may have, but yeah. last I understood it, we were still at least pretty far up there.
Okay, so the home farm. So who are you in the operation with?
So it's technically not, it's not my farm. It's I work for Klukas Farms, and my boss is Scott Klukas. He employs, I think there's 9 of us right now, full time. And we farm all of our acres, and it's corn, beans, wheat, and hay, too much hay. there's still a pretty big equine industry around here. So a lot of hobby horses, but it's mainly dressage and jumpers and the like. So we supply a lot of small square bales to the equine industry around here.
So if there's 9 of you, you can't all do the same job. So do you have a specific set of skills that you do, or do you get to do everything?
Mainly during the year, I'm the spray rig operator, and I run a telehandler to pick up the hay, put it on trailers in the field.
Big Those are my bales, two main right? Round bales.
Small squares.
Small squares.
Yep.
You like, do you ever get on the back of the wagon and, you know, the hook and you stack and do all that thing?
I used to. That's how I learned to do hay, but we don't do it that way anymore. Everything's mechanized. So we're moving them around with a telehandler in the field, putting them on trailers, bringing them to the barn, and unloading with a skid steer.
Your social media handle on, at least on Instagram, is Farmhand, right? That's kind of in the middle, mm-hmm. NJ Farmhand. Do I have that right? Yep. Why'd you start Instagram?
Well, I started Instagram a long time ago just because everybody else did it. And, you know, probably back in the college days. And then I don't know. I think I want to say it was probably Millennial Farmer's fault for doing his thing on YouTube. And I was really interested in that. And it was cool to watch somebody else from a different part of the country farm. You know, there was always videos about it, but he really had a good way of, you know, a little bit of comedy, a lot of explanation. It was cool. And him being a corn bean operation was, you know, there was a likeness there. So then I don't really remember exactly how Instagram started, but it didn't really get to the point where it's at now until I was reached out to by a fella in South Dakota, Casey Briggs, who was watching my story one day and saw me stuck in traffic going to work. And he asked me if traffic was always that bad. And at first I was like, who's this guy, you know? So him and I got to talking a bit, and it just kind of snowballed into meeting a couple other guys from the I-States and Texas, Arizona, and it's stretched all the way across the country and around the world now.
Kind of makes the industry seem a little smaller.
It makes the industry seem a little smaller, but it has been extremely humbling, for one, to learn about what's going on everywhere else. And you learn about the good and you learn about the trials and tribulations from different parts of the country. You know, you listen to the guys in West Texas that are begging for rain, while there's guys in North and South Dakota wishing it would turn off. And we're sitting here in the middle, like, it can't decide whether it wants to rain or have a drought. So, you know, everybody likes to pick on me for the traffic. That's kind of the main thing, because one of our main challenges is moving equipment around here. But learning the different operations and getting to watch how other people do things has been a really cool experience. And I hope to keep learning as the years go on.
Something that you find maybe on Instagram, if you pass that up to the boss or picked up the phone and said, hey, look, let's do this.
There's been quite a few times where it's like, you know, that's really cool. You know, you're looking at something on the phone and I show them and I was like, that's actually a half decent idea. So we've actually applied a few different things to the operation, depending on what's going on.
Okay, you mentioned a few names and the back and forth. I have seen you engage with several other people. What is it with this conversation ping among people, that having the discussion that is fun for you? What I mean, that's like the old chat, you know, in a chat line. You've taken it to a whole new level where you like tag each other in stories and go back and forth.
Yeah, it's well, I'm a very social person. And it's, you kind of become like virtual best friends with these guys, you know, and it's almost like, I like to compare it to being at the bar. You know, you're sitting at the bar with your buddies, but we're not at the bar. We're all in tractors somewhere tagging each other in what we're doing and making fun of each other. And it's become really, you know, it's just good. You know, probably lifelong friendships with these guys.
The whole social part of it. Have you met any of these people in real life yet?
A couple of them. We met up at the farm show in Louisville last year, not this year because they didn't have it, but myself and Barrett Brown and Ross McCall and Al Amundsen met down there, and Ryan Vonderhaar. So we got together, and then there was a whole slew of other people that were there, and we all kind of crossed paths here and there, had a couple talks and a couple drinks along the way. And it was really neat. You know, we're all walking around and like looking at different, you know, you're at a farm show, so you're looking at different equipment, like, wow, that'd be really cool. And they're like, what do you need that for? You know, you walk around, Barrett's looking at cattle rigs, and we're, you know, we're looking at combines. He was upset that they didn't have any cotton strippers there.
Oh yeah.
But it was nobody ever has anything for the cotton guys, you know. It's,
yeah, well, you know, you got to remember how niche cotton is. And where I'm staring at a wall on the other side of this camera, and if I looked about a mile to my west is where cotton pickers are made for John Deere, one of their two facilities. And it's weird to think in Iowa that they would have cotton pickers made that are going to be shipped several states south. But I had a conversation with some cotton people earlier this year, and they described it – let me see if I get the term right – aristocratic fraternity. It's old and established, and it's very well-entrenched by a small group of people. And, you know, big USDA report today as we were recording this. This was the day the Planted Acres came out. And a discussion that we've had a market to market several times has been, is cotton going to lose acres to corn and soybeans? I mean, and so because I always get these questions of why do you keep talking about cotton? But it matters, and it matters to you, too.
Yep. There's I've had a few conversations with guys down south that have talked about switching to a corn program, or but depending on where you're at, for me, I look at corn and soybeans in more of a scientific light. You know, I am a certified crop advisor, so I tend to look at things differently. But whether you're irrigated or not, you get into these hotter parts of the country, and you have it's a tough go. You know, cotton is made for that; it's ready for it. But I also know that cotton is on the East Coast anyway, moving its way north. I've already seen it in Maryland and Delaware. So it's not much, but it's there.
It's like you got company. Sounds like you got company.
Yeah, dog decided he's going to play with his toy. But when we were on our honeymoon a couple of years ago, we were coming up through Maryland and into Delaware, and I was like, that's cotton. I've never seen cotton before. So I had to, of course, I had to pull over, and I plucked a couple plants and brought them home. But it's kind of a weird, you know, some people talk about climate change and the warmer areas moving north. So if that's the truth and that's going to happen, I would assume that over time the crops are going to follow suit. And these guys that are down south now growing cotton may end up having to, I don't know, maybe they're going to end up growing bananas someday or something, but
you don't know. Yeah.
But, obviously that's years and years in advance, but I've seen other people even on social media that are growing cotton up in the Tennessee, Kentucky area. So I think the guys down south are looking at that saying, well, if they're going to start growing cotton up top, then we're going to have to start doing something different down here. If they're going to flood the market, now we need to find a new market. So it's cyclic.
Yeah. And I've heard back to that cotton discussion I had, they were saying in Kansas, wheat acres have been replaced by cotton. That has become a thing. So it's getting close to us here. And and if it's up close to you, excuse me, it's not very far away. Please enlighten us who might not. There might be some people who don't get your traffic reports and what that means and stuck in traffic. Could you expand upon that, please, Kevin?
Well, I have it's 32 miles one way trip to work or from, and the majority of that is on a 3-lane highway. So this morning it was gridlocked, and I had to find a way around because a tractor trailer had an accident and they had the road shut down. So yeah, the traffic reports. There's always traffic here. Westward expansion. Most people are living in Pennsylvania, Western New Jersey, and commuting into the city for work. And if people want to have the country lifestyle, but they want to have the city paycheck. So it's definitely cheaper to live out here too. So. There's a whole bunch of us every morning and every night just cruising up and down the highways in New Jersey, and some people banging into each other. So,
okay, that brings up a point. I mean, we're coming up on – we're over a year since, the COVID really shut a lot of things down, and specifically New York City, Philly, big cities, people moved – further out, or they stayed where they lived. Have you noticed that maybe traffic never went down in your area because people are not commuting in? They're just going down to their basement or the spare bedroom to work?
This past year has been the most glorious year for highway travel ever. because nobody was on the road. People either weren't working or working from home. The kids weren't going to school. Rutgers was closed down, which Rutgers is kind of a lot of the students are in that same commuter pattern. And it's been awesome. But there has been in the last couple months a slow uptick in traffic, which I'm kind of like, I use that almost as a weather report. You know, you're sitting there and it's like, all right, there's more traffic. We're kind of bottlenecking once in a while. And I kind of feel good about it rather than being upset, because that means people are going back to work and things are starting to pick back up again. It was kind of bleak for a while. There was nobody on the road.
Eerie.
It was weird. Really, really weird. Now, normally, anyone from out of state that ever drives through New Jersey, beware. We are a bunch of crazy drivers. We are absolutely 100% the best drivers on earth, and no one can tell us otherwise. And we think it, we know it. And but when there's a lot of diversity as far as driving patterns, and we all get jammed up in the now without anybody on the road, it was like, you know, where is everyone? It was so nice, you know, on many different levels, because my travel time in the morning went from an hour commute to 35 minutes. So just to put in perspective of how bad it can be. But I'm hoping that it starts to get back to that hour commute soon. So then we know that we're making progress and we're back to normal.
One of the things in your Instagram feed that always catches my attention is when you have this big bird that would show up in your stories, but it hasn't been there since January. You used to have some land, right? You'd see Air Force One land. Do I have that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was neat. Whether people like Trump or not, that was really cool. One of the coolest ones over last summer. We were baling hay at the Solberg Airport, which I believe is a fuel stop for them when they're in their travels. And I never saw Air Force One up close and personal, but Marine One, Two, and Three all landed there while we were baling hay, which I was pretty surprised they even let us keep going. I mean, the end of our hay field is the runway, and they all landed right in front of us. And you know, the Army or National Guard, whoever it was there, posted up. They were there for security, and they just let us keep going. We're like, all right, well, thanks, appreciate that. You know, they could have come over and kicked us out, and we just bailed hay in front of them. They were all standing there in a line watching us. It was pretty cool. But talk about it's kind of like a surreal experience. You know, here comes the president or Congress people, whoever was on those helicopters. Mm-hmm. But his golf course, we actually have a couple fields that back up to the back end of his golf course. So, what was it? 3 years ago now, I guess I went to, there's a little farm lane that goes back there, and I took the sprayer back there and I got stopped by Secret Service. This guy come around me with a Ford Explorer in the grass and cut me off and got out with his hand on his hip. And I was like, I didn't know what was going on. I had no idea he was in town. So I talked to the guy, everything was fine, and they let me go up and do what I was doing. And they were putting up a big surveillance tower in the corner of our cornfield to overlook the golf course, because he was going to be there in the next week. And so that was kind of crazy. I got to talk to Secret Service for a little bit, and they weren't sure what I was or what I was doing, but I looked like a big bomb on wheels, I guess, and giant stainless steel tank. So yeah. that was pretty cool. And ever since then, I think they realized what was going on, and they never really bothered with us. You know, they would shut down roads that they had to shut down, and we just wouldn't go that way. Whenever he was in town, all these roads were just closed off. You couldn't get anywhere near that golf course. So we would always try to keep an eye on when he was coming so that we knew what we could and couldn't do. You know, a couple fields, these places that need to get tended to, make sure you do it before, or make sure you can wait until after.
Well, and I suppose after a while they have files. They knew who you were. They knew more about you than you realize.
Yeah.
That's why they let you guys keep working. Because
they knew exactly who we were.
There's a story. In fact, I just told it the other day. next to the White House is Treasury, and then there's a hotel. And it's about eight, you know, they can only have buildings a certain height in Washington, D.C. And there's a balcony outlook. And my uncle was out there one day at a meeting, and him and another guy, all of a sudden, somebody from the hotel came in and said, "Hey, guys, our neighbor's called. You've been out here long enough." So they're always watching. They're always watching. So when that happens, you know, Secret Service has to do what they have to do, and you see the planes and the helicopters come in. I mean, it is kind of cool to see how the two can interact and work together. I mean, it is true. When you hear about rural-urban divide, how do you think that goes in your neck of the woods in New Jersey? How do people in the city view those working in the country, even though the country is kind of all around them?
From a lot of the interaction that I've had with anyone that has grown up and lived in the city their whole life, I've had a few interactions. They have no idea. None whatsoever. They don't follow the Agstagram. You know, they're not into it. They don't want to be out here for any more than a vacation. And when they go on vacation, they're just going to another populated area. It's not like they're going to go visit a farm. The divide is great. It's a very, very hard conversation to have as a farmer speaking to someone that's so far removed from the farm that, you know, they've never even seen a tractor or would be able to pick out a cow going by on the road. It's, you know, the farthest it's ever got is EIEIO. And I try to think that, you know, someday, I don't know how I'm going to make it happen, but I've been thinking for a long time. Sometimes I want to go to New York City with a table and a sign that just says, "Ask the farmer anything." And I'll just sit there and let people come and ask me questions, and I can answer them to the best of my ability. But reaching that crowd and getting them to listen is the hardest part, because I think the majority of people don't care where their food comes from. As long as it's on the shelf when they go to the store, that's what they care about, and the price. So like during COVID, I know a lot of people that went for the local market because the supermarket was very expensive. But they found out that they could go to one of these local farms, if you travel far enough, and buy yourself a whole cow, pay to have it processed, go pick it up, and all of a sudden you have meat for a year. And they didn't even know that that was possible. So I think COVID has kind of switched that market around a little bit, where a lot of people have realized that they can go and get their food straight from the source. And it's flipped quite a few opinions that I've seen along the way, because people that thought, you know, you get into the animal cruelty conversation or the inhumane slaughter kind of thing, and all of a sudden they need it and there's no other way, you know, so they have, now they're okay with it because they realize it is okay. And yeah, we are doing a good job.
Well, and that's what COVID maybe has opened that door for that conversation to happen more. You mentioned, you know, again, where you're at is a spot that you can see the city from here, but it's not. And those in the city aren't looking out to you and thinking that, well, let's face it, some people in a high rise don't think you matter. And that's the unfortunate part, except when they're hungry and they need some food. And here you are to, and you did save the day in March, April, May, and this whole continued time. I think it would be awesome if you would go and take a table, like that internet thing where it's the guy sitting there with the cup of coffee, you know, whatever, yeah, on the sign, put that in Central Park along one of the main routes, ask a farmer, and you'd be amazed probably how many people might stop.
I know a lot of local guys that are veggie growers that take their produce to the farmers markets up in the city. And even they have said that the interaction with the people there is very negative. They're there with the food from their farm. And it's, you know, the questions are always the same, you know, Roundup and organic. And it's, those are the two main conversations. And for me, if you're going to farm, you have to farm right. You have to do it correctly. I don't care what system you're in. You want to farm organically? Good. Go farm organically, but you have to do it right. You want to farm conventionally? Good. You have to do it right. So the conversation always turns to, well, why aren't you organic? I could sit for hours and explain why we're not organic. You know, and somebody could say, well, why don't you plant more cover crops? We're not set up for it right yet. Do I think it's coming? I sure do. I think that's coming down the pipeline in a hurry. But you get into these systems and you talk to these people that don't know, but all they heard was somebody in the Wall Street Journal say that Roundup causes cancer. You know, how, for me, as someone that's been running a spray rig for 10 plus years, I've used a lot of it without any concern whatsoever. But to tell them that, and they're like, it's like they've seen a ghost.
Yeah, I bet.
So trying to explain that the LD50 of Roundup is less than that of caffeine, and they just kind of look at you cross-eyed because they don't understand. And it's a very difficult conversation, and it takes a very patient person to have it. I've had plenty of conversations, and a lot of them, they just don't want to listen to you. They don't want to know whether they think I'm true or not. They don't care. They have it in their head that we're all trying to kill them. And you know, it's, what was that thing? Farmers are the only people that work, 400 and some odd hours a month or whatever it is, and to feed people that think they're trying to kill them. And it's difficult. It really is. It's kind of disheartening because there's also so much more to agriculture. It's not just the farmers and ranchers. You know, there's more to our own industry. When you look at the retailers and the salespeople and the consultants and the marketers and all of that. But then you go outside the industry, you got to think about all the people that keep our infrastructure going. You know, we still need to use electricity. We still need to use fuel. We still need to use, you know, all these other energy sources. So when people, I personally don't like when we single ourselves out, because we're not in this alone as farmers and ranchers within the industry, but we're also not in this alone as an industry. There's plenty of other that got to keep the wheels turning. And when you talk to people, like I had a conversation with the president of Exxon, and I had that conversation with him because he wanted to talk about organic farming. And I quickly flipped it around to, you know, dude, you're the president of Exxon and you want to ask me about why I'm not organic?
Well, and that's that opening. Yeah, and that's that opening that you have to take. So good for you.
Yep. So I, you know, we started this, the conversation started out about the environment and what we as farmers can do for the environment. And I said, well, what can you do for the environment? You're the president of Exxon. You mean to tell me that you don't have any pull to try to help something out? There's also a lot of wealth in this area like that. And that those are the same people that are also very disconnected, but they have a huge platform. So in order, anytime that I have that opportunity, I'm going to take it and try to sway somebody into maybe, you know, if they have any sort of negative thinking of agriculture in America, I do my absolute best to sway them the opposite direction.
Well, it sounds like you've got some field days ahead. You're going to be hosting things to have all these people come and educate, do some education.
I funny story. I was actually an ag education major when I went to college, but I left as a crop science major because I wasn't sure if I wanted to be a teacher.
Well, it's worked out. You've been able to mix the one with the other right now. How about that?
Maybe I can make some money doing it someday.
Hey, there you go. Hey, do this virtual thing. Get out of traffic, or you can do it in traffic. Yeah. Make your time count.
NJSP will be after me if I do it in traffic. Oh, you're not allowed to be on your and electronic devices while driving.
I suppose you will. You'd be shut down in a hurry, and then farmers breaking rules in effort to educate. Yeah, you'd defeat the whole purpose of it. All right. Well, Kevin, I appreciate the time, and thank you so much for taking time. And good luck here as get that corn in the ground. It's almost April.
Thank you for having me on. It's been awesome.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Kevin Morrow, for that discussion. Great to meet you, and have fun this spring. And he is busy operating the sprayer the majority of the time. So hopefully he's listening to your podcast, and we hope and thank you for listening to this one. We'll see you next time.